Today's Retro Wrestling Ireland podcast is sponsored by one of our listeners, John Foster. We appreciate your donation and the support you've given us. Damn it, it's 2012 and 2013, not 2013. Any more time. Silent podcast. Welcome to 2013. Happy New Year to everyone. I hope you all had a great Christmas and a good New Year. So we've hit 2013, like I've just said, and just saying that word is kind of weird. Back in the 80s, the late 80s or mid to late 80s, I remember having a book around the house that was called Book of the Future, and this was by Osborne, and it goes for quite a pretty penny on eBay these days. And it was talking about the year 2000 and the kind of cars we would have then, maybe rockets and so on. None of that's ever transpired, yet we're in 2013. But to think back then of the year 2013, it felt an eternity away. It felt ridiculous. We were never going to make it that far. And if we were, we would all be on hoverboards, wearing silver suits and, you know, living in the sky somewhere, living in space even. None of that has transpired. Technology has moved on in great leaps and bounds, but we're not all going around on the hoverboards. And tell you what, if I was walking around in a silver spacesuit, I would get some funny looks. But it still seems weird that we've made it this far. We've made it to 2013. I remember back in 1998, I got my first passport, and seeing the expiry date on there is 2008. I just thought, that's miles away. That is so far away. I'm never going to have to renew my passport. Well, I did have to renew it in 2008. And that says 2018 on it. But suddenly 2018 doesn't actually feel that far away. It's 5 years away now. And wow. You know, time is moving on. Time is waiting for no one, literally. And you've got to make the most of everything. But we're here in 2013. Yeah, we're banging on about retro games. This is the Retro Asylum podcast. This is what we're here for. This is what we do. And this is what we talk about. But why? Why do we talk about it still? Why do we want to hark back to those days? Is it simpler times? Don't know. That's too great a topic to start talking about on this particular podcast. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to look over 2012. I keep wanting to say 2000, but that is not right. 2012, which was a nice and easy thing to say. 2013 has got a load more syllables in it. 2012, nice and easy, nice and simple. You know, was a great year for us as Retro Asylum. So in 2011, the Retro Asylum was formed. We come about. I wasn't a part of it then. It morphed out the 1HMPS podcast and website, which was run solely by Andy, but had a few other people on board. Swain and Glenn. Blimey, I'll get my words out in a minute. Swain and Glenn. We're also a part of it, along with Malcolm, a couple of others. So things have morphed. 2011, there we go again. 2011, the Retro Asylum was born, essentially. 2012 was a big year for Retro Asylum. Went from being quite a small community with a fairly small listenership up to big figures of people downloading our podcast and the site, which is just growing and growing. Great little community out there now. And 2013, nearly did it again, is going to be, I think, another good year for us. So during 2012, I come on board as one of the co-hosts. And, you know, it's a great honour to be doing this alongside Andy, Dean and Glenn. Also Retro Darren come on board. And hopefully we'll get a couple more regular presenters at some stage during this year. Also, some of the podcasts that we did over the year included the community members. And I think they were a great success, actually, to get the community involved in the Retro Asylum podcast. It makes you feel more a part of the podcast when you're listening back on it on iTunes or have you listened to it. And that's why we encourage you to get onto the forums, get yourself on there. it's a friendly bunch of people. We're not going to bite your head off. No one's going to bite your head off. There might be some opinions. There might be some real opinionated discussions going on. Don't worry about it. It's not about who's got the biggest balls to put their point forward. It's about putting your point forward and at the same time respecting other people's opinions and views on the world. And that's what this podcast is about. It's people's opinions and views on retro gaming, essentially. There's always opinions and views in every walk of life. But I think what we've done as a podcast is we've presented ourselves in a really quite a friendly way, a very open to discussion. We don't look down upon things too much. But of course, if something wasn't very good, we're going to say it wasn't very good. And I think that's good. It's got to be an open forum, open discussion. And that's the same on the community forum as well. And of course, we welcome you to join up. Get involved in the comments, get involved in the forum. Just bring yourself over there. We've seen the download stats. We know there's a lot of people out there lurking and not wanting to get involved. That's fine if you don't want to get involved. But what we'd say to you is make yourself known in some way. Send us an email. You'll find our addresses on the forum or on the main website itself. Or follow us on Twitter. The Retro Asylum Twitter account is Retro Asylum 1. Mine is Wilshie Dread, and that's W-I-L-S-H-Y Dread. D-R-E-A-D. I won't go into the reasons why it's called that, but it is. We're on Facebook, so just search for Retro Asylum on Facebook. If you go over to the main page of Retro Asylum, there's links to all the different social media networks there and iTunes links, etc., etc. Make yourselves known to us. It's really what gives us the encouragement to carry on with this podcast is hearing from you people out there who listen to us, because at the end of the day, that's what we're doing it for. So what I'm going to do on this particular podcast, just run through a couple of shows that caught my attention over this last year from Retro Asylum. Maybe ripping them apart a little bit and talking a little bit about them and then giving my own view. So maybe a little bit untraditional, but as we've not got a full set of members at the moment, because I should tell you why, Andy is off having a baby, or at least his good lady is. Dean Swain's just had a baby, again, his good lady has, and Glenn, don't know what Glenn's doing, but I'm sure he's about somewhere. So, just giving you a little roundup of 2012, if you have only just joined us listening to this podcast, then you might want to know what last year was all about. So, I'm going to give you a little bit of a rundown of a couple of bits and bobs that happened over the last year. So way back in January 2012 was Rose Tinted Glasses. And what's that about? That is, as it sounds really, do we look through as retro gamers Rose Tinted Glasses about games that we liked back then, and you know, you've gone back to it at future times and they've not really been that good. And I can certainly speak from experience that that has happened to me on a number of occasions. That you know, you go back to one of those old games that you really, really liked and you thought was the dog's nuts. You've played it again all these years later, say 20 years later, and God, it just hasn't stood the test of time. Now, I'm sure that happens to all of us. I think the later the platform goes in terms of time, you know, you get to the 16-bit era, and some of the games still fairly relevant nowadays, in my opinion, because 2D gaming sort of had a bit of a comeback over the last few years with the indie games seen on the PS3, Xbox 360 and the handhelds, you know, iOS and Android. So 16-bit seems like the cut-off for where games don't date quite as badly as the 8-bit computers. But you go back to a lot of 8-bit stuff, and while technically very impressive that arcade games are squeezed into those small machines, often the games really look dated. Now, that's a sweeping statement, and by no means does that cover every single game, because just off the top of my head, for some reason, popping into it is Back to School. Back to School is a classic game that, in my opinion, does stand the test of time, whatever year you play it. It's something that hasn't really been replicated much over the years. I suppose Bully by Rockstar, I think, I'm sure it's by Rockstar anyway, that kind of touches on that feeling, but it hasn't really been done again, that whole concept of being in a school and skiving lessons and doing what we all used to do at school. Certainly I did a few, you know, my fair amount of skiving lessons, mainly PE games. I just never got on with exercise. You wouldn't think so. I'm not exactly a portly fella, but you know, I just hated exercise. I still, to this day, I'm not a fan of exercise at all. So, but I digress. Back to School popped into my head then as a game that has stood the test of time. It was a remake in 1999, I think it was. It was called The Castle 99. A great remake. Something you need to dig out if you're a PC owner and you enjoy Back to School or School Days on the Spectrum. And School Days was out on the Commodore as well, I believe. But yeah, Rose Tinted Glasses was one we touched upon in January. That was Andy, run through that one. Now, episode 9, top 10 arcades. So Andy, Dean and Glenn went through their top 10 arcade games. Now, this is one I'm going to have a little touch on because it's something that maybe I don't fully agree with on all their picks. But I'm going to run through a few of them now and who chose them. So there was a little bit of an age gap from starting at Dean down to Glenn. There's probably about 10 years between them from what I know, and that certainly shows in a lot of the picks that they both went through, and Andy as well. Andy sits in the middle of them, and is around about my age as well, so the games start quite old and come up to quite new. So Dean straight off was with Donkey Kong, probably the oldest on the list, I would think, without doing too much research on it. Glenn come in quite low down on his list in the top 10 with Virtua Racing. So there you go. There's a big span of dates there from Virtua Racing and Donkey Kong. Andy and Dean both mentioned Shinobi, which was coming into sort of the late 80s for that one. Ghost and Goblins from Dean. It's a real classic platform game there with a stupidly hard difficulty curve. You've seen the story from Andy, real solid game, and there were some brilliant conversions on that on the home computers. None more so than the NES version. Now, I hadn't seen this until recently. Andy mentioned it on the forums, and I thought I'd check it out on YouTube, and my God, that's not just graphically pretty good for an 8-bit console, but the music was really, really good, really. Certainly not faithful to the original, though it was the same tune, but it was just almost like a remix and a really good one as well. I'm really impressed with that. The Amiga version for me was the one that did it, because that's the version I had. Brilliant little platform game there. Again, quite low down in the top 10, Glenn had Ridge Racer, going for the racing games there. And Ridge Racer would come out around about the time of the PlayStation 1 when the 3D game was just coming about in the home consoles. And from what I've played and seen, the Ridge Racer on the PlayStation 1 is very similar to the arcade. It was one of the good arcade conversions there. Both Dean and Andy spoke about R-Type. Andy had it higher up in his list. Really, really great shoot 'em up there. Dean and Andy again went for Outrun, Dean rating it higher than Andy. Glenn had Pac-Land in sort of midway down his list, which is an older game for Glenn, who's not quite as old as the rest of us. Chess HQ for Dean, Double Dragon for Dean and Andy. Dean rated Double Dragon in his number one, because if you've ever listened to any of the podcasts or been on the forum, and Dean absolutely loves Double Dragon. So there we are. And you know what? It's one of the games I still really haven't played. I've just put it onto MAME on my iPad, and I'm going to start playing that with my arcade as well, because I need to play it. I need to experience what all the fuss is about. For someone who's been around and going for a long time, it's quite strange. I've not really played it. Obviously know what it's all about. Then Glenn again, Sega Rally's in there. Brilliant, brilliant game. Moved the driving genre on, in my opinion. Street Fighter 2 was Andy's top. Daytona Racing was Glenn's number one. Now, I'd have definitely had Sega Rally above Daytona myself in the arcade. As I say, Sega Rally moved the driving genre on in the arcades. But in my top 10, driving games feature quite heavily. And you'll see I've got a fair spread from early days to the more recent games in the arcade. Probably the oldest game on my list is Pole Position. I suppose to some degree Pole Position 2. But Pole Position, something I played on MAME over Christmas. And it's really, really slick. To think that was done in 82, 83. And while, okay, it isn't a driving simulation game, it's most certainly arcade. There wasn't really the physics models back then that we have of nowadays, certainly not. Even of 10 years' time, the physics models weren't really around then in the gaming. But Pole Position really comes across so slick and nice. So that's a good one in there. These are in no order, particularly APB. it's just that, in, you know, the intermission screen when you've done a particular task and you've got the sergeant bloke there telling you how well you've done. One of the sort of classic intermission screens for me, but having that steering wheel, accelerating and brake, catching the litter bugs and the hitmen and all that was really quite unique at the time, the police chase kind of game, from an overhead perspective as well. And if you've listened to the Amiga top 10 driving games that myself and Retro and Darren did, you'll see that that ended up fairly high on that list. Because we kind of put in a wild card entry of, is it a driving game, is it not a driving game? Well, it is, really, but just not in the traditional sense. So APB up there for me. Paperboy had the handlebars. You've not got them on the home versions, and you've not got it on main. Those handlebars were what made that game brilliant. Fantastic music as well, real chunky graphics. Remember the graphics really wowing me back then. Fantastic game. Some good home conversions, just lacking the handlebars, so it's never that great. Of course, OutRun, I agree completely with Andy and Dean there. OutRun, well, one of probably the most recognisable soundtracks to a computer game ever, and a great driving game at the same time. Again, there wasn't the real physics there then, but still just absolutely one of the icons of arcade gaming, I'd say, OutRun there. One of the first shoot 'em ups I played in the arcade was 1942. That doesn't rate too high for me, but 1943, the sequel, was and is a classic arcade game. Got some good home conversions, but when you've got main these days, you don't need anything else. 1943 is really, really good. I was playing on main not so long back, one of the later ones, 1904X, I think it was, and it was a much more up-to-date version, done in about 2000, I think. And that was really good. It was the same concept, the same overhead shoot-em-up game, but with graphics that are much more up-to-date. Really, really nice. Sticking with the driving theme from back in OutRun, we've got Power Drift, which was sort of using the same engine as what OutRun was, but gave it that undulation aspect going on there, which was new to it. Again, really chunky graphics. Got the steering wheel. Nice. Really, really nice. R-Type, absolutely agree with what Andy and Dean say there. One of the best shoot 'em ups ever released on any platform. And to echo what Andy said, there was some great home versions, and none more so than the Spectrum probably being one of the most impressive, that it had, I think, most of the levels, but just the way it captured the original in such a small and underpowered machine, essentially, was really, really good. I really like the Commodore 64 version. It got rated really, really poorly, but in its own right, it's not quite R-Type. It's got a similar concept as R-Type, but it was lacking a lot of the arcade elements, but it was still a good shoot-em-up in its own right. Really, really great shoot-em-up going there. Operation Wolf, who doesn't like Operation Wolf? I'm sure there's plenty of people smacking their stereos and going, I didn't like it. What are you on about, Matt? What are you on about, Matt? It's the gun. The gun did it for me. Having that physical gun that you could shoot with was something else, really. It's really great. There was great home conversions there as well, but again, lacking the gun, just like Paperboy was lacking in the handlebars. You're lacking a gun, just not got the same feel to it. But there were some really, really good versions there. Also, let's move on. How many have I done now? Because I'm sort of chopping around my list here. I think I've got a couple more to go. Sega Rally 2. Glenn put Sega Rally into his top 10 and very, very high up. Sega Rally moved on the driving simulation genre, really. It was probably one of the best physics engine in an arcade game at that time, in an arcade racing game at the time. And even when you play it now, it's just instinctive. It probably pushed that rally concept on, and everything's followed that since. But for me, Sega Rally 2 is the better game. Just feels even more tied to, whilst keeping that same Sega Rally feel to it. And even Sega Rally 3 on the home systems more recently still feels like Sega Rally, essentially, but a little bit more up to date. But Sega Rally 2 for me was the one that did it. But also, again, is another driving game in my top 10. And I think it's more for the graphical aspect of it, with Scud Race, another Sega driving game, which was a little bit more futuristic, less simulation-like. Felt a bit more like Daytona, I think, in the driving physics, but the graphics wowed me at the time. I believe it's 96 that it came out. just the underwater sections where you were in a glass tube almost. Fantastic. So there we are. So that's my top 10 arcade games. I'm sure I've missed something pretty critical out here actually, but for the life of me I can't remember it. But so there we are. That was the arcade top 10, which was way back at the beginning of 2000. I've done it again, haven't I? 2012. Other such topics that were tackled in the podcast through the last year were Mario vs. Sonic, the top 10 Atari 2600 games, top 5 Codemasters games, then a few of the Retro Asylum lot went down to, went on the Great Arcade Hunt looking for decent arcades, and I think they just found a load of dance machines and penny drops and fruit machines, but that was all quite disappointing really. For a good arcade, I recommend Hailing Island on the South Coast. The pier there has a lot of old school games, some of the newer ones, and a fantastic pinball section as well, which had the Addams Family in it, which is widely touted as one of the best pinball games ever. Please don't fire me down for that, all you pinball fans. For the layman in the pinball world, Addams Family is up there with the best of them. And in May was my introduction into introducing on this podcast. It's episode 14 and a half. I spoke about Team 17 and why I possibly thought they were a little bit overrated. So check that one out, see what you think. One of the interviews we had during the year was with Colin Jones, who was the producer of Rockstar Ate My Hamster, amongst other things. Really, really nice interview, and you get a little insight into what went on there, and a really nice guy as well. But Rockstar Ate My Hamster was, I lost many a Sunday to that game. Really, really good.
Hello everybody, this is Damien, and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Moving on through the year a little bit, we touched on many different ones. There's a Rob Hubbard music special. Those that don't know Rob Hubbard, fantastic musician, sort of remembered for his Commodore 64 SID chip tunes. Also an interview with the Bedrooms to Billions producers. So there is a documentary film this hopefully coming out sometime this year. It's being touted around the June time, and it's again a documentary film showing the history of the British video games industry and how it's had such a vital part in the video games industry as we know it now, and the billions and the billionaires world that it is now. And there's going to be lots of interviews with developers from the 80s, your John Ritmans, Jeff Crammons. Hopefully, I'm really looking forward to the Jeff Crammon one. I'd like to watch 90 minutes of Jeff Crammon really having done one of the greatest games ever in Formula One Grand Prix on the Amiga, but that's me being a bit selfish there. John Hare is going to be on there from Sensible Software. I think it's going to be a really, really interesting documentary. It's going to run through, like I say, right from the mail order games days to the magazine publications and how the computer games industry built up pre-internet into what we know now. And I think that's going to be absolutely a really, really great watch. Being based in the UK myself, obviously I'm going to be really able to relate to this, and having lived through much of the 80s playing computer games and growing up around it, I think that's going to be really, really good. So look out for that one. Myself and Retro Darren did the top 10 Amiga races, as I mentioned before. And I think I'll finish on the Play Expo in October that we all ascended to. Had a good old look round that, so you can hear our report on what we saw, what we found, and how much fun we had down there in the Play Expo. Can't wait for the next one. Also, one final one I'll touch upon, actually, is the top 20 games ever that Andy dared talk about. Like I was saying at the start, the site is all about opinions, and this podcast built on the premise of, you know, a couple of guys down a pub having a drink talking about retro gaming. or in the case of this particular podcast, one loner down the pub talking to himself about retro gaming, which actually I wouldn't put it past me to do that. So Andy broached the top 20 subject, and just to pick a few out from there, it was quite heavily platform involved. So we got Super Mario Land on the Game Boy, Super Mario World on the SNES, Bubble Bobble, Super Metroid. Super Metroid's something I never really gelled with. I didn't really like that whole flip screen scrolling mechanism that was going on there. RoboCop was great on the home platforms. Number one for Andy was Street Fighter 2. It's a game that I've never really gelled with. Not a big beat 'em up fan, but I can see the attraction with it, and having played it enough, I know it's a really, really good beat 'em up. So there's a little sort of rundown of what we went through into 2012. Nearly did it again. It's well worth listening back on the shows. They don't get old. This is about retro gaming. It doesn't get old, does it? Well, theoretically it does get old, but you know what I mean. The shows don't date because we're talking about old stuff. So right now you're probably chomping at the bit to find out what we're going to be doing in this coming year. Well, I think we're going to grow like we have last year. Say we've got myself and Retro Darren on board now, so hopefully the podcast will keep flowing on a week-by-week basis. We've got some great interviews coming up for you this year. Dare I say some of these names, but I'm hoping that I shall be doing this one particular interview with Dino Dini of Kickoff and Goal fame. That's really going to be a great one. Having met Dino down at the Play Expo in October, real humble guy. Looking forward to that one massively. John Rittman, who also did a football game, Match Day, wasn't it, on the Spectrum. Again, he did Head Over Heels, amongst many others. Really respected person. Jazz Rignall. Jazz Rignall was, I wouldn't say a controversial journalist, but he certainly had a mark of authority on Computer Games Mags, and probably changed the face of Computer Games Mags during the 80s and 90s. So that'd be great. That'd be really, really good. So there's some really good interviews coming up, and if we can get some more, of course, we will provide them for you. So what I'm going to feature now is music from the past. There's a forum thread going on the Retro Asylum forum, which has gone a bit stagnant. So let's revive that and get people talking about it again. This is music from games that have impressed you in the past, and there's been talk on there about the Donkey Kong theme tune on the SNES, which is the aquatic theme. Brilliant, brilliant sort of ambient piece of work there. I only heard it when I first heard it on the thread, and it really is something really quite special. One of the best computer game theme tunes I think I've heard over the years. I'm going to pick on a post by Hoolicool, one of our newer members, back in October, mentioned about Turrican 2 on the Amiga, which was composed by Chris Hulsbeck. Chris Hulsbeck was a real prolific musician throughout the Amiga era, and just recently he's done a Kickstarter to do the Turrican soundtrack anthology, which was more than successful. He'd put up $75,000 as the target, and it actually got $175,000, so that's brilliant. It looks like we're going to be expecting a nice CD from Chris Hulsbeck. Wonderful musician, and I believe certainly Turrican 2 was using a specially coded music player which allowed around 7 channels, if I remember rightly. Turrican 2, brilliant, brilliant soundtrack. I thoroughly agree with that. So what I'm going to play you first is the title track from Turrican 2. We'll be right back. Also following on from that, we've got Trantor, who mentioned the Cannon Fodder theme tune on the Amiga. This is one of the most nostalgic tunes that I've got on the Amiga, definitely. And if you listen to my previous podcast, I've harped on quite a lot about how Cannon Fodder reminds me of Christmas. And as we've just left Christmas, I think it's fitting enough to listen to that tune now. So here's the Cannon Fodder theme tune, written by the late, great Richard Joseph, who sadly died a few years ago from cancer. Cannon Fodder. It was quite controversial at the time, certainly that theme tune, very controversial, and Sensible Software used the poppy from the Royal British Legion, or essentially from the Royal British Legion, which caused a bit of an uproar at the time. It was probably one of the earlier examples of a computer game ending up in the national press and getting a bit of a slating. It certainly didn't harm the reputation of the game though. Fantastic game, great music. The intermission theme music, which I shall layer underneath some of this chat during this show, is also a great, great piece of music. Richard Joseph was very good at writing those little intermission theme tunes. Chaos Engine by the Bitmap Brothers, he also did the music for the intermission theme tune there as well. Fantastic music, really, really good. What I'm going to give you now is two of my favourite tunes from years gone by on Amiga and Commodore 64. So I'm going to choose one from Commodore 64, one from the Amiga, just to give you an insight into where my music tastes are when it comes to old computer games. First up, we've got the Last Ninja Remix theme tune. So Last Ninja, series of games released by System 3. Great music on all of them. The theme on Last Ninja 1 was probably one of the most classic, but what we got on Last Ninja Remix was literally that, a remix, and it was by, and I'm going to say this name very wrong, it's Ryan Owenhand, I believe that's how you pronounce it. Very, very, very talented musician. I urge you to go and check out his YouTube clips where he's done live acoustic versions of classic C64 game tunes. Absolutely brilliant. You can find his website at www.reyn.net. Brilliant, brilliant tune, this one. Also, the level music in this game in Last Ninja Remix was really, really great. One of the tunes, I remember the game quite fondly of being sort of an underground level. Had a cover version of an old sort of Chinese, Japanese influenced tune. Can't remember for the life of me what the original tune was, but brilliant. What he did with the Sid chip was, well, in himself, he has admitted he sort of copied his peers in Rob Hubbard and Martin Galway and that, but he managed to get some depth out of that Sid chip, which you didn't hear so much from other musicians. But here we are, this is the Last Ninja Remix theme tune. Now, while this is probably not what I would deem to be one of the best tunes on the Amiga, it's one that holds a lot of nostalgic value for me. Alien Breed, the original Alien Breed by Team 17, music by Alistair Brimble. It was one of the first games I played on my own Amiga. Not on the first game I played on the Amiga. It was the first year I got my Amiga. In 1991, this was one of the first games I played on it. For that reason alone, every time I hear the start of that theme tune, I am transported back, which is now 22 years ago, which is just shocking to say things like that. So here it is, Alistair Brimble's Alien Breed theme tune, published by Team 17. I could do a whole show on great computer and console theme tunes and music from those eras. There were so many, certainly in the sound chip days of the C64, the AY chip from the Spectrum, the 8-bit, that 8-bit chip music sound was just fantastic. The way people had to push themselves because of the limitation of, say, 3 sound channels, getting so much out of those 3 channels. And of course the SID was is undoubtedly the most famous of the lot of them, but you can just listen to some of the AY tunes when it was done by a good musician, Jonathan Dunn, David Whittaker. They were very, very good as well. Going on to the Amiga, SNES and Mega Drive, not so much. The Mega Drive sound chip always failed me personally. I didn't like that FM synthesis sound. While very authentic to the arcades at the time, which were using a very similar sound chip, it just doesn't have that depth of sound to me. Amiga was very sample-based, which in some respects was a little bit lazy for producers because they could sample anything and use it in a tune. They were still limited by the amount of memory they could use, the amount of disk space they could use at any given time. So that's what pushed those musicians a little bit in those days. But like I said, I could do a whole show on computer game music. Really would love to do that at some point and just rant and ramble on about some of the great things from days gone by, because music for me is one of those biggest triggers of nostalgic memories. The whole reason I'm into retro gaming is for nostalgia. Probably the biggest reason I'm into it is because of nostalgia, and music more than anything on those old games is the thing that takes me back the most. So maybe I'll do that one day and really give some of my personality and music across. So as this podcast is yet to feature any news and what I've been up to, which is traditionally what we like to start a podcast with, the news I'm going to give you now is around a Kickstarter project called Elite Dangerous, which I mentioned in an earlier podcast. This is a follow-up to Elite and Frontier from the 80s and 90s. Kickstarter project was up there gunning for 1.25 million. David Braben had done some very heartfelt videos on the Kickstarter page. And for those who know Elite, those who know Frontier, it's a game that's got a lot of fans. It's got a very, very cult following, as well as a very massive following, in fact. Lots of sort of remakes, or kind of remakes. There's an open source version called Elite, which I mentioned before. But Elite Dangerous wanted 1.25 million. They whacked through that target nicely with 1.5 million, so that's 1.5 million in the bank for them. At 1.4 million, they were going to do a Mac version, so that's going to happen. And at 1.5 million, there's going to be, I think, 10 extra ships going to be available in the game. I'm really excited about that. I think it's going to be good. David Braben's involved, his development team's involved. I have absolutely no doubt that is going to meet all expectations and shatter expectations. So real big congratulations to Frontier Developments and David Brabham there. Brilliant stuff. Can't wait for that myself. What have I been doing over this Christmas period? So we spoke before Christmas about what I like to do. What have I been doing since Christmas? Well, I've actually done something I've wanted to do for ages, and I mentioned it again in an earlier podcast. I'd love to spend some time on Frontier Elite 2 on the Amiga, and I thought I'd get into this in some way, shape or form, just so I can say in my life I've played an Elite game. So I found on YouTube some videos called Frontier Fundamentals by a guy called Jim Plays Games, or a channel called Jim's Plays Games, and 4 episodes on there which explained everything perfectly. Everything that I has sort of dumbfounded me before about Elite, about Frontier, just so much easier. And I've been enjoying sort of fiddling around in there, not really taking it too seriously at the moment, just getting used to the combat mechanics, the trading mechanics, how to control the ship and so on. Got to say thank you to Jim for those videos. Really, really good. Really enjoyed them. And I can't wait to get into that a little bit more. And because it's an open-ended game, there's no end to it. I can play this for the rest of my life if I wanted to. So, brilliant stuff. And I've just noticed that he's done another episode 5, Beyond the Core Systems. That's been uploaded 5 days ago, so I need to get into that one and have a look what that one's about. That's what I've been up to, really. It's been a lot of travelling around, seeing family, seeing friends, going back to work. But I also got an iCade for Christmas, which I've got to say, I am so impressed with it. It feels nice, it's built really well. The controls are great, real clicky micro switches, which you can hear in the background there. Really, really nice. I've jailbroken my iPad now. I've got iMame on there and a SNES emulator. It really brings games to life. And there's some games in the App Store, many, many games in the App Store, which support the iCade. Some of the best ones, Jeff Minter's games, Grid Runner, is really, really nice on the iCade. I think that is one of the best purchases, but I didn't obviously buy it. I got it as a Christmas present, but it's something I think you should go out and buy if you've got an iPad. I'm sure there's ways of connecting it to Android tablets as well. Brilliant. I'm quite shocked at how good a quality it is. Iron, who make it, are not really known for their quality products, but that is really great. Can't wait to have a little go on it a little bit more and get into some more MAME games, play Double Dragon, R-Type on there. Excellent. So is this podcast draws to a close. I've got to say congratulations to our N64 competition winner, who was Andrew Joseph over there at the Yoke Folk Forums. So congratulations, you've won the N64 plus the games. That'll be winging its way to in the post very, very soon. I'm sure we'll have some more competitions coming up in the near future. I'm almost tempted to give away the Mega Drive, which I started customising with a paint job and really didn't get very far on it. So that might come as a competition present a bit later on down the line. Also, we're going to be interviewing and sharing some stories with some other retro gaming podcasts, sort of sharing the love out there, showing that there is a big community feel amongst this retro gaming family we've got listening and the community out there. That'll be great. And hopefully have a presence at many of the retro shows going on this year. There's Geek Down in Margate. I'm sure there's going to be another Play Expo again. Hopefully we'll have some representation down there and we can do some features, interviews, and just do some great recordings from those shows, which always brings a whole lively buzz of its own. That's it for this episode, episode 30. Just want to say thank you again to John Foster, the sponsor of this show. Your donation is much appreciated, of course. And if you want to donate to the Retro Asylum cause, check out the main page on the website. There is a donate button on there. Every donation is gratefully accepted. And John, thank you very much for that. We're well chuffed with that. So until next time, people, 2013 is starting here. It's been Matt Denias taking you through, and this is the Retro Asylum podcast. Take care, speak to you soon.